Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVernier. Horror coming up in this hour. We have Edge of Your Seat Radio, later on with Suspense with the story Door of Gold. But right now, it's the Hermit's Cave with Notebook on Murder. If you were a listener in the Los Angeles area at the time of this broadcast, you could have tuned to other stations for the news, deadline dramas, and Two Reverends on the air. But instead, KMPC broadcast the Hermit's Cave. It was 9:30 in the evening when listeners heard Notebook on Murder.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air.
Now, the Hermit.
Ghost stories, weird stories, and murders too. The Hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. Have you heard the story, Notebook on Murder, eh? Then listen while the Hermit tells you the story.
What's all the racket about? Well, stop crying and tell me what it is.
There was someone in my room.
Oh, you've been dreaming.
No. I woke up and heard my door creaking open. I could feel it. There was someone standing in my room. And then I heard them run down the stairs after I called out. Hubert, you've got to go downstairs and look.
Well, of course I'll look, but you don't think there's going to be anyone in the house after all your screaming, do you?
Oh, Hubert, wait a minute. I'm going with you.
You better stay right in bed, Cora.
No, I'm afraid.
Oh, you said you heard someone go downstairs.
I know, but I won't stay here alone.
All right, come on. I think you just had a nightmare.
Oh, no.
That's a nice way to wake a guy up out of a sound sleep. All the screaming.
Oh, you'd have screamed, too.
Yeah, not much. I tried to nab whoever it was.
Look careful, Hubert. The burglar may have a gun.
I can't find the light switch here in the living room.
I'll get it. What? Look. The rug is kicked up. Someone was in here. And look. The things on the table have all been disturbed.
Yeah.
Hubert, where are you going?
Well, to look through the house.
Oh, wait for me. Room window.
I see it. Well, by George.
I came in through the dining room window.
Well, it should have been locked.
I thought it was. I haven't had these windows open for ages, not since I've been home.
Well, I'll be...
Where are you going?
Why, to phone the police. There sure has been someone in this house.
Looks like they used this window for entrance and escape, all right. Hal, find any footprints outside the window?
No, not a darn one.
Well, maybe they didn't use the window.
Well, there's a cement drive outside this window. It's possible they could have stepped on the cement both entering and leaving.
We'll take fingerprints of the window. Now, let's see, a few questions. You were the only one who heard the noise, Mrs. Armour?
Yes. I heard the door to my bedroom open slowly. Then close, and then someone running downstairs.
And the first thing you heard?
My wife screaming.
How far is your room from hers?
Just across the hall.
Are you a sound sleeper, Mr. Armour?
Well, I guess so. I rarely wake up during the night.
And you, Mrs. Armour?
I don't sleep so well. You see, I've been ill and in the hospital. I'm not well at all.
There now, Cora, everything's all right. My wife had a nervous breakdown recently, officer.
Oh, I see. Well, just a few more questions, and then we'll let you go back to bed. Any valuables in the house?
No valuables, exactly. I usually have quite a bit of money on me.
Why is that?
Well, I don't bank anymore. Cash my salary checks, and what I don't put into bonds, I use to pay bills.
How about tonight?
All the money's safe in my room.
How do you know, Hubert?
Well, silly, I looked when you yelled burglar.
Who knows that you carry a good sum of money around with you, Armour?
Oh, I don't know. Some of the boys around the office, I guess. I may have mentioned it in the bar.
They got those fingerprints, Hal?
All set.
Yeah, we won't disturb you any more tonight. Obviously, there's no one here now. They didn't get anything this time, and they may not disturb you again.
Oh, I hope not. It was awful. My nerves can't stand it.
Go back and get a good night's rest. That is, what's left of it. You won't have any visitors again tonight. Good morning, Mrs. Armour. Remember me?
Oh, yes. You're one of the policemen who was here last night.
Mind if I come in? I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Oh, no, come in. I was just out in the kitchen finishing up the breakfast dishes.
Well, then we'll go out there. I can talk to you while you work. Did you sleep after we left?
Well, yes, sir, I did. And you know, this morning I can't remember much of what happened last night.
That's all?
But I don't remember things well at all. Not since I've been sick. Lots of times things are foggy with me.
How long were you in the hospital, Mrs. Armour?
Let's see. It was a long time, over a month, I guess.
What brought on your illness, Mrs. Armour?
Well, sir, I don't know exactly.
Were you unhappy?
Yes, sir, I was.
What about?
Well, Hubert got so he didn't pay any attention to me.
That's so? Stayed out a lot nights?
Yes, he did. He was never home. But since I've been in the hospital, he's been wonderful to me. Kind and good and home every night.
Oh, came to his senses, did he?
Yes, sir. There's been a great change in Hubert.
That's good.
Yes. I feel like I can get well now. Of course, the burglar coming has upset me. Coming into my room like that and standing there in the darkness. Hubert says if it wasn't for that window being open in the dining room, we might just think of it as a bad dream I had.
Well, Mrs. Armour, we're going to keep an eye on the house. And we want you to help us.
All right. What do you want me to do?
If you see any strange persons hanging around here in the daytime or night, you call the 4th Street station and report it. Now, here's the telephone number. Or anything strange that happens, you remember and tell us.
Sure, I will. The best I can.
You know, it might be a good thing, Mrs. Armour, if you wrote things down in a notebook. As long as you can't recall things very well.
Oh, what should I write down?
Oh, anything odd that happens. And what's more, Mrs. Armour, you keep this notebook a secret, just between you and me. Think you could do this?
Why, sure, I guess so.
Not even tell your husband?
I could keep it from him.
Good. Now, let's see. Suppose you keep these notes under the mattress of your bed. Only you and I will know that they're there. Write down anything you want to, and keep it for me.
There was a peddler at the door this afternoon. He had funny eyes. I thought he might be the burglar come back again. Didn't let him in. He went to Mrs. Joyce's next door. She didn't let him in either. Hubert read to me tonight about a burglary on the south side of town. This burglar got in through a window, too, the basement window. He took money and silverware. We haven't got any good silverware. It's 15 minutes to 12 midnight. I just woke up, and I'm scared. Awful scared. I'm writing in this notebook because I've sort of got accustomed to doing it. And it steadies my nerves a little. I've been writing in it for a couple of weeks now. But the policeman called Hal hasn't been around to see it. Maybe it's because I haven't called or had anything to tell him. But I'm scared tonight. It was at supper that Hubert said...
You aren't frightened of burglars anymore, are you, Cora?
Sometimes I'm afraid of him coming back again.
Oh, fiddlesticks. There won't be any more disturbance after all this time has passed.
Oh, I hope you're right.
Of course I am. Well, anyhow, I have to go out tonight.
Oh, Hubert.
Now, don't cloud up and cry, baby. No one's going to hurt you. What's more, we'll see that all the windows are locked and the doors.
Why do you have to go out, Hubert?
A buyer. Boss asked me to see him tonight.
I'm afraid. Terribly afraid.
Now, listen, there's nothing to be afraid of. Before I go, I'll see that you're safely tucked in your bed. Well, you were complaining before supper about being tired. So you can take a little sleeping pill and go to bed early. Then I'll lock all the doors and you'll be as safe as a bug in a rug. What's more, I'm going to be home early. I told the boss I couldn't leave my wife for too long a time.
So Hubert got me all fixed up. And after taking the pill, I did fall asleep. But a little while ago, something must have woke me up. It's exactly 12, and Hubert isn't home yet. I know because I just called out and he didn't answer me. It must have been about 10 or 15 minutes ago that I woke up and heard something outside my room. Footsteps. There would be one step, and then a long pause, and then another. For a minute, I was so scared I couldn't even breathe. Somehow, I just seemed to know that whoever was coming down the hall was coming to my room, and for me. For a few seconds, I couldn't move, just sort of paralyzed with fear. And then I got brave enough to reach out and turn on my bed lamp. The person must have been real close to my room when the light went on. There was one more step. And then they stopped. Officer Hal, as true as I'm writing, they stopped right outside my door. I heard a board creak. Then all was very, very still. For almost years, it seemed. And then I heard, very quietly, as if someone was tiptoeing, footsteps leaving my room. A light. The light has frightened them away. Oh, I'm so certain that it was someone coming for me, but what am I going to do? I'm too truly afraid to go downstairs and phone for the police. I'm going to call out to Hubert again. Hubert? Hubert? No, Hubert isn't home yet. Or perhaps whoever has come into this house has done something to Hubert. Hubert! My door. I know it. Someone just moved outside my door. I'm going to hide this notebook under the mattress like you told me to do, and then I shall scream out the window for help.
after Cora Armour puts the notebook under the mattress, she goes to the window, opens it, and is ready to scream for help. The door to her bedroom opens, and she calls out in terror. She sees a man standing there with a gun in his hand. One pleading cry, and then...
No!
Cora Armour has been shot, murdered. Will the police be able to find her assassin? The hermit will tell you before the night is done. We hear a key turn in the door. The door unlocks. Swings open. And closes. Then the light switch is clicked on. Hubert Armour stands in the hallway of his home. He steps over to the mirror hanging on the wall. He looks himself over carefully, brushes his hair with his hands. Now he looks at the stairs leading up to Cora's room. He pauses for a few seconds. Then he walks into the living room, turns on the lamp beside his chair, sits down. From his pocket, takes the early morning edition of the paper, scans it, dropping the paper all around his chair. Now he rises, turns off the lamp, walks into the hall. He calls Cora's name.
Cora! Cora, you awake?
Naturally, there's no answer, for Cora lies murdered in her bedroom. A large red stain soaking the carpet on the floor. The blood is dripping slowly. Slowly, a crimson pool is collecting there. Hubert calls again.
Cora! Cora, I'm home.
And now he looks about him into the darkened room leading off from the hallway. Now there's a startled look of apprehension, fear on his face as he begins to mount the stairs.
Cora, are you awake?
Hubert pauses outside a door, just as the murderer did only a little time before. He listens, and now his hand reaches out for the doorknob.
Cora! Cora! She's dead. Blood! She's dead! Dead! Operator, get me police headquarters, please. Hello, police headquarters. This is Hubert Armour, 97864 Crawford Street. Come at once. Hurry, it's my wife. She's been murdered.
All right, Armour. Suppose you tell your story over again, just as you told it before. And you left the house when?
At 7:30, officer.
And where did you go then?
I went directly to the office where I was to meet Mrs. Davis.
Was she there when you arrived?
Oh, yes, sir. She was waiting in her car outside the office building.
And this was approximately at what time?
Well, I think it must have been about 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Mrs. Davis will be able to verify this?
Oh, yes, of course, officer. Well, why are you grilling me so carefully? That isn't going to help us find out who killed my wife.
Go on with your story.
Well, I suggested to Mrs. Davis that we drop into the Greenbrier Club to discuss her insurance policy, and she agreed.
Yes? Go on.
So we left her car standing near the office, and she got into mine, and we drove to the Greenbrier Club.
The doorman took care of your car?
Oh, yes, sir, and he'll remember that. Well, you can check all of this that I'm telling you.
We will. Go on.
Well, there isn't any more to tell. We sat there and talked, had a bite to eat.
What time did you leave the club?
Well, a little after 10, I think.
Then what did you do?
Well, I took Mrs. Davis over to her car.
Then?
I drove straight home, put the car in the garage.
What time did you get home, Mr. Armour?
I didn't look at my watch, but it must have been a little after 11.
But you didn't call us about the murder of your wife until 20 minutes after midnight. Why was that?
I didn't know my wife was murdered, officer. I called out to her when I came home, but she seemed to be sleeping. She'd taken a sleeping pill before I left tonight, so naturally I thought she was still asleep.
So what did you do then?
I went into the living room with a paper, sat there and read a while. All the while until I went upstairs and discovered my wife's murder. I don't know what time it was I called you.
We know.
And we know other things, Hubert Armour. We know at what time your wife was murdered. She told us.
What do you mean she told you?
She told us just as much as if she were alive now.
But I don't understand what you're driving at.
No? And when your wife told us at what time she was murdered, she also told us who murdered her.
Well, who? Who did it?
You were very clever, Hubert Armour, from the very start. When you planned this crime. When you called us here to hunt for a burglar who was no one but yourself.
That's a lie.
You built this thing up slowly. Tonight you carefully accounted for your time up to 11 o'clock. The remainder of your alibi was weak. It might have been strong enough if Cora Armour had not left us a notebook on crime.
What?
I asked her to keep a notebook to tell me all the strange things that happened in this house. She did. She kept it faithfully. Midnight tonight, you, according to her own writing, were not home. She called out to you, but you didn't answer. But you were here. You came in. You crept to the door of her room. You lost your nerve. You came back at midnight, shot her, left the house to dispose of the gun, returned, sat down on your chair and looked at a paper, then went upstairs to look in her room and to report her murder. Yes, Armour, you had it all planned very carefully. But you didn't reckon with Cora Armour's notebook.
There's someone outside my door. I know it. Someone just moved outside my door. I'm going to hide this notebook under the mattress like you told me to do. And then I shall scream out the window for help.
You heard the scream, didn't you, Hubert Armour? You heard it?
No. No, I didn't.
You heard the scream, all right. She made it when you opened the door, when you lifted the gun to fire on her.
She didn't scream. She just called out, "Don't, please." Oh. I admit it. I killed her. She was a stone around my neck, nagging, never well. I hated her. I wanted freedom.
She wasn't well because she feared you, Hubert. She feared you all the while. It was fear that sent her down to a sanitarium. In her heart, Cora Armour feared death at your hands. And yet, without her notebook, you might have gone free of the crime of murdering her.
Did a notebook kept by a woman right up until the second of her death bring a murderer to justice? A notebook which spoke as strongly as if Cora had returned from the spirit world to point her finger at the guilty one. Yes, turn on your lights. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
The Hermit's Cave, on Tuned to Yesterday from 1944, a syndicated broadcast. It's an hour of old-time radio horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now we bring you one of two stories E. Scott Fleurer contributed to the Suspense series called Door of Gold. That's from February 10th, 1957, on CBS.
Suspense. The Peruvian jungle is no place for a woman. But Janice insisted she was an archaeologist first and my bride second. It was rugged. In addition to the snakes, bugs, and mildew, there were the unfriendly Quechua Indians, each of whom claimed to be a direct descendant of the Inca, of Manco Capac himself. It had been slow going. We excavated burial mound after burial mound and found nothing. Perhaps they were right. Maybe my translations were wrong and the Puerto de Oro was only a legend. We had only one native guide, a sullen Indian named Juan. So everyone worked, Dr. Clayton, myself, even Janice. Inside the mound that morning, I could hear old Dr. Clayton and Janice chipping away. Suddenly, Janice shouted. What? What have you... Finally. The Puerto de Oro.
Congratulations, Philip. You were right. Professor Wellman's translation was in error.
Well, it's bound to make you famous, old boy. You realize that.
Oh, Phil, I'm so very pleased for you, but I'll have to listen to you now.
I say, look, even Juan is impressed.
Si, senor. For many lifetimes, my people have... Está muy magnífico. Es el puerto de oro.
This burial mound was built against the mountainside. Like all ancient Inca structures, a marvel of shaped stone and grooved rock, fitted so neatly no mortar was required. We had torn down a section of the wall facing the mountain until the door was revealed. A door that glittered dully after Janus used chemicals to dissolve the corrosion. There was no mistaking it. Embossed on the metal was a rising sun, its rays throwing streamers of pure gold across the panel. Is there anything in the inscription that would indicate how to open it?
Well, let's see. It says, light to the seeker comes through the shafts of God.
Well, that makes everything clear. Oh,
patience, child. Your impressions, Philip.
Well, you see where the sun slants through the cracks in the stones up there? See?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it hits the wall in two places.
I say, so they're the shafts of God. They're God.
Correct. Now you take one, I'll try the other.
What should we try?
Well, I'd say press in on the stones where the light hits. Most of their hidden doors are counterbalanced.
That's it! You got it! It's moving in to the side!
Chill crept along my spine. The religious chanting of the college-educated Huans, the scratch of stone on stone, and the musty odor that crept forth from the now-open tunnel raised the short hairs on the back of my neck. It was silly, I guess. The early sun streamed across the bare floor, but from that dank opening came the odor of death.
Smells pretty bad.
Oh, that child is inexperienced talking. The mere fact they're getting the odor means that there's circulation in there.
Oh. Well, how shall we handle the search inside?
Dr. Clayton, if you wouldn't mind, we'd like to...
Oh, no, not really. I'll go in later. You and the child go. Honeymoon trip, cool darkness, young bride. Sounds romantic.
With that smell, I don't think I could raise a pucker.
You wish Juan to go, senor?
Well, if you don't mind, no. If anything happens, a pivot or a counterbalance stone or something closes the door, we'll need both of you out here to get it open again.
Ah, si. We shall wait.
We quickly gathered the necessary equipment. I belted on two flashlights, the four battery type, and filled my side pack with spare batteries. Sidearms, a medicine kit, sandwiches, water, of course. Finally, a rope. When we were tied together, I gave Janus the long bamboo probe.
Janus had better go in first, don't you think, old boy?
Yes, I think she should. Now, listen carefully, Janus.
Yes.
Both of our lives may depend on it. Walk lightly. Place your feet carefully and test each slab before stepping on it.
Oh, now, gentlemen, please. I may just be out of college, but I have studied their culture. I know all about the flip-flop stones.
Very true, youngster. But it's different in the classroom. There you can laugh at a mistake.
The most important thing is to remember if I should go through somewhere, you can't hold me unless you drop flat.
Okay. Let's go before I lose my nerve completely.
Juan.
Okay, senor.
I brought up the rifle so you and Dr. Clayton can keep an eye out for unfriendly natives. If anything should happen, fire two shots.
Si. Vaya con Dios, senor y señora.
Go with which god, Juan?
Oh, the Christian one, senora. The sun god. He would not like it.
We moved slowly down into the slanted passageway. Nervously, Janus stabbed at each of the fitted blocks with a long probe, while I mapped them, numbering them on our chart. The corridor slanted upward again, and the entrance was gone. We were alone.
Suddenly, Block 87 swung from under her and she dropped through. Janice! Janice! You all right?
I don't know!
Can you reach your flash?
I think... Yes, I've got it.
What's down there?
It's not too deep. Maybe 30 feet.
Okay, hold tight. I'll pull you up.
There you are. See, Daisy?
We're lucky that pivot stone didn't close. Oh, Phil, hold me close. That's better.
Darling. Just think what this means. We'll make Professor Holloway and that entire bunch at the university crawl when we get back. No money, no official recognition, and all those so-called scholars peering down their noses at us. You wait. It'll be a pleasure to make them eat their words.
Yes, darling. Meanwhile, will you please mark that darned 87 block red?
We went on, skirting the still-tilted lip of the pivot stone and inching forward. Twice more, we located swinging traps, the second over a swiftly moving stream. That was why the air was relatively good. Suddenly, Janice stopped, yanking on our connecting ropes.
Phil, I don't like the feel of this block.
What's the matter?
Oh, it's no pivot, but it's not solid. It feels like it wants to give downward. Counterbalance, maybe?
Don't put weight on it. Let's work around it and see what's beyond.
Why, is that a door?
Yeah, some kind. That may be what Block 590 controls. You game?
To try it? Sure.
We went back to Block number 590 on the chart. Janice lay flat, and I stepped gingerly on it. Sank about a foot, then the hollow thunder reached us. The pressure caught us a moment later.
Phil, what was that?
Afraid to think. Put your hand down near the tunnel floor.
Yes.
Feel anything?
No. Why? Should I?
No, I'm afraid not. We've lost our air circulation.
Oh, Phil.
Probably means 590 closed the main entrance.
Maybe Juan and Dr. Clayton will open it in a minute.
Yeah, maybe. Well, we'll go on a bit. Perhaps that second panel opened at the same time.
Don't you think we ought to go back?
Why? We can't open it from the inside. They'll either get it open or they won't. We crept along silently until we reached the second door. It had not moved. Remembering the entrance, we fumbled with the stones on either side, but they didn't work. We found the combination by accident. None of the stones helped, but when we moved to either end of our rope, preparing to go back, both blocks moved downward slightly, and it opened.
Oh, Phil.
They can't hurt you. They've been sitting there for over 400 years.
You mean they were trapped here? In their own hidden passage?
No, it was the bidding of their sun god. They sat there until it no longer mattered.
How awful.
Yeah, in one way. Yet in another, rather magnificent. When Pizarro raided their city in the sky, what gold they had not thrown in Lake Titicaca was brought down into this tunnel. They stayed to guard it.
Phil, put your arms around me until I stop shaking.
I managed to soothe her jangled nerves, but there was no one to calm mine. Where was the confounded air circulation? The minute the outer door opened, we would feel it. Surely if Juan wasn't tall enough, Clayton could rig something for him to stand on, or was there something else? We made quick work of it going back. Using the other flash in the chart, we hurried along the tunnel, carefully avoiding the marked traps, until we made the last dip and reached the golden door. It was still closed.
Dr. Clayton! Dr. Clayton, open the door!
Hold your strength. That door is 2 feet thick. Clayton! We're back! Can you get it open?
Hold on! Dr. Clayton! Can you hear us?
Si, senora. Juan is here.
Juan! Where's Dr. Clayton? The two of you can get this open.
Very sad, senor. The good doctor... He has had an accident.
An accident? What kind of a... Well, never mind now. Go get help. Open door. You hear?
Si. Juan here. But he cannot do this.
Cannot? What do you mean?
From nowhere, the sun god closed door. You his guest. He would not like if you leave. Juan, stop Dr. Clayton from sacrilege.
Juan, please!
Juan, what's that noise? What are you doing?
Son God, not one passage found. Juan must reveal the world.
What are we going to do? How can we get out?
Losing our heads won't help. We might... What's the altitude of this burial mound?
I don't remember. Wait a minute. Dr. Clayton marked it yesterday. Let me think. About 3,600 feet above sea level. Why?
Now, think a minute. My translation said the Puerto de Oro would be here.
Yes.
It was. Now, that means this tunnel must be the one which leads up to Machu Picchu. So, if Clayton's figures are nearly correct, it's about a mile west... and 3 miles straight up inside the mountain.
Oh, that's a welcome idea. I thought maybe...
I know. Come here. Honey, we mustn't ever give up. We're both trained. We studied the ancient Incas. And if anybody can outwit them, we can.
Thank you, darling. I'm all right now. Let's go.
We went back into the now familiar part of the tunnel, counting blocks and squeezing past the dangerous ones. When we reached the second doorway, we stopped.
Poor devils. They don't look so frightening the second time, all huddled over their belongings.
Janice, what's wrong with you?
Now look here.
Pardon me, old man. There. Does that look like personal belongings to you?
Good heavens. I forgot. Is all of that gold?
Pure gold. What you're staring at is the ransom of the Inca sun god. Pizarro murdered him, so the Incas hid the gold here to prevent the Spanish from finding it.
Why... There must be millions.
Yeah. Even at the tiny percentage that would be allowed us by the Peruvian government, this would make us wealthy for life.
Would?
Okay. Will. That better? It was hard to keep the note of doubt from creeping into my voice. The
gold had been here four centuries.
Why?
Well, it didn't make sense unless... There was no trouble with traps the next half mile until...
Phil, another door. It seems bigger.
Let's try the same positions as before. It might work.
It's moving. Oh, scares me stiff when I start to drop that way.
Keep your eyes open. We're getting tired. We're getting to be sloppy.
What's that? Down there ahead. Oh, Phil, Phil, I'm sorry. Counterbalance. Oh.
Oh, what's the difference? May as well have that one closed, too. I doubt if we'll be back. Up, 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 until it seemed as if our legs must drop off. And then, suddenly I heard Janice slump to the steps ahead. Janice! Janice, you all right?
I guess so. There's another door. Use the light.
Yeah, sure, honey. Now rest yourself. I'll... Oh, no.
What's wrong?
It was all there, right in Almagra's diary. All I had to do was read simple Spanish. No, no, I've got to be clever and find the Puerto de Oro anyway.
Hell, that isn't a door?
No, it's not. In the diary, Diego Almagra wrote, "Their gods were angry and the mountain shook." Look, you see that step? It's sheared right in half.
Earthquake.
Right. When the quake struck, it shifted the other half of the tunnel. Maybe 200 or 300 feet one way or another. This is a dead end.
Oh, no! It can't be! You're trying to frighten me! Phil, don't kill around, Alderman, please! Please, Phil, this isn't funny!
Stop that!
Oh.
You hear me? Stop it! Right now!
Going to pieces won't help. I hated to slap her, but I had to. And she understood. She didn't say a word. She just turned and went slowly back down. It seemed hours before we reached the bottom of the stairs. Well, the air was much better. Minor consolation. So we would die of thirst and hunger instead of suffocation. We came up against the first of the closed doors. But it wasn't that easy. We tried combination after combination. Then, just as we were ready to drop from exhaustion, we happened to move back from the door, she on the third block and I on the sixth. Instantly, there was that sinking sensation, and the door moved toward us and disappeared flush into the wall.
Oh, come on, Phil, move. If it works on the next door, it might work.
Yes, I know what it might, but... Well, take it easy. Charge or no charge, it's dangerous to rush.
Oh, don't be silly. That's a...
I felt sick. There was no tension on the rope. The revolving pivot stone had cut it easily. I scrambled to the pivot stone and lay at arm's length while I tried to move it. No dice. Nervously, I felt for the flash and pressed the button. Nothing happened. Again I tried and cut my finger as I found the reason. The lens and bulb were smashed. I fumbled for the other flash. It too had broken. I was alone in the darkness. Must think. Pressure. Yeah, that was it. Pressure. The third block back needed weight. I crawled to the nearest skeletons and dragged them aside, digging for the sacks of gold beneath. I crawled slowly, tugging some of the heavy ingots with me. Finally, I had a pile of them on the block where I had been standing. I crawled back to the pivot stone. This time, it moved. Janice! Janice, can you hear me?
can't broke when I tried to stop your fall. Both of them. Are you hurt?
I don't think so. I landed on a bunch of old friends.
Is it deep?
I don't think so.
Dennis, what's wrong?
Don't know. It had eyes. It's gone. Can you get the rope down to me?
Can you estimate how far?
Wait. I've got the match, Tim. Wait. There. Can you see me all right?
Yeah. Now, you're lucky. There's quite a pile of them. I'd say 15 feet. Stay still. I'll rig something. I took the remainder of the cord, fortunately about 9 feet, and tied my belt to it. I added my shirt to the upper end and lowered it through the half-moon opening. Janice, light another match. Okay. Now here. Can you reach that?
Yes, I've got it.
Easy. I've got my shirt on this end. Just take your end and square knot the two. Don't try to help. I want to get hold of the belt before I really pull. Easy. That pivot's standing straight up. Don't touch it. We might not be so lucky a second time. Judah, run in tunnels. Well, come on now. And cross everything. We've still got a chance. That's all it was. A chance. We edged down the tunnel in the dark, staying close together now since the rope was gone. We tested everything carefully. Then found the second door. It was a thrill to stand on the third and sixth blocks and feel them move. I used one of the precious matches to refresh our minds from the chart. Then we began to count backward, walking hand in hand.
15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10. Oh, this is awful. Eight, seven, six.
Hold it. I'll stay here and pray. You go to three.
Here goes nothing. It's opening. Come on.
Juan had rebuilt the wall. But we found no trouble knocking the stones down from inside. At last, we were free. Blackness had long settled on the jungle. It was dark in the mound, but to us, it was bright. I saw Janice on her knees beside Dr. Clayton.
He's dead.
Hmm. I'm not surprised.
Phil! Phil, what's that?
Come on, run! Run! Get out of here!
Oh. I told Dr. Clayton only yesterday that all the hang was dangerous.
No. Now, that was man-made. You see up there?
What?
Against the night sky? That's Juan, fighting the sun god's horde and murder.
We didn't even get a little smidgen of gold. With Dr. Clayton gone,
They'll never believe your discovery.
Forget it. Let them keep on believing Wellman's translations. Me for Cusco and home. Coming?
Try and stop me.
Suspense, in which Myron McCormick starred in William N. Robeson's production of Door of Gold by E. Scott Floor. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 10th, 1957 on CBS. That wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.